This Is Your Life, episode number 7. This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? This is your life. Hello and welcome to this episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt, and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. Today, we're going to be talking about the importance of asking the right question. Man, I think this can be a game changer for you. I know it was for me. But before we get started, I've got just a few quick announcements. First of all, I'll be speaking at Catalyst West on April the 18th through the 20th in Irvine, California. I'll be leading one of the labs on April the 18th on the topic of my new book, Platform: Get Noticed in a Noisy World. In fact, I'm going to be speaking at all the Catalyst conferences this year, so if you can't make it to Irvine, join us at Catalyst Dallas on May the 9th through the 11th, or Catalyst Atlanta on October 3rd through the 5th. And if you haven't registered, you can do so at cometocatalyst.com. Cometocatalyst.com. I've got a link in the show notes. But Catalyst is one of the very best leadership conferences out there. I look forward to it every year, not only as a speaker, but also as a participant. Second announcement is I'm going to be doing all the backstage interviews at the Chick-fil-A LeaderCast on May the 4th in Atlanta. This will be my third year in a row. It's an enormous privilege to do this because I get to interview some really, really cool speakers. This also is one of the best leadership conferences out there. It's put on by the same people that do Catalyst, a company called Giant Impact. But this year I'm looking forward to interviewing, get this, Tim Tebow, Marcus Buckingham, John Maxwell, Soledad O'Brien, Patrick Lencioni, Andy Stanley, and Coach Urban Meyer, and many others. But these interviews are going to be broadcast live on the day of the show and then replayed on my blog in the weeks following the event. Again, this is something I've done every year for 3 years. It's phenomenal. But in addition to the live event in Atlanta, this event will be simulcast to more than 100 locations around the world. So if you can't make it to Atlanta, see if there's a simulcast in your city. And you can just find out more information at chickfilaleadercast.com. And that's got some hyphens in it. It's chick-fil-aleadership.com. And again, I've got a link in the show notes to make it super simple for you to click over there and find out more. So let's get into this episode. Again, today I want to talk about the importance of asking the right question. You know, this last week was really, really tough for me. I don't remember the last time I've had a week where so much went wrong. My big project for the week was recording 6 video sessions for a new product I'm creating, and we just ran into all kinds of technical problems. First of all, the program that we were using to record, it was a Skype interview, and we were using a program that, for reasons I found out later, it was only recording one side of the interview. So we'd go through the interview, and I had my colleague, Michelle Cachette, who was interviewing me, and only one side of it, my side of it, was getting recording, but I wasn't picking up her. And it was very, very frustrating. Well, we finally figured that out, and frankly, it was a stupid error on my part. I was minimizing my window, and that was the problem. So once I left it maximized on my computer screen, everything was fine. Well, then we didn't have sufficient bandwidth, so the video would abruptly stop, or we'd miss sections, or the audio would lag behind the video. You know, it was one thing after another. So both of us got rewired, and instead of using wireless, we used a wired connection, and that made all the difference. It wasn't perfect, but it vastly improved the quality. But this was taking like several hours every time we had to troubleshoot this. Well, then once I got the videos recorded, I could not, for the life of me, get the compression settings right. So when you record a video and you want to upload it to Vimeo or YouTube, and by the way, this is more information than you want to know, but let me just tell you, since I'm launched into it, you have to get the compression settings just right on your computer. Otherwise, when you upload it to one of those services, the audio and the video is completely out of sync, and it looks like a really, really bad, not so funny foreign film. And that's how it was looking. And again, I was pulling my hair out. I was ready to scuttle the project when finally I was able to Google the solution and fix it. And it was kind of convoluted, but it worked. Again, not perfect, but pretty good. And I'm satisfied with it. But once we got the technical problem solved, then we were all set to record it. And we set aside another day to do this. Now, this is by now our third day of recording these six videos. I thought it would take us, and this is kind of typical, par for the course for me. I think things are going to take less time than they end up taking. But we had to schedule this third day. And just as we got started on it last Friday morning, my next door neighbor, for an inexplicable reason, decided he was going to re-roof his house. Now, it's not his fault. Doesn't make him a bad person. He didn't know I was going to record and he didn't check with me. That's fine. But just, you know, as fate would have it, so to speak, he decides he's going to re-roof his house. And he's taking the tin off and it's making all this noise. And my office studio is literally 15 yards from his house. So we were picking up everything. And that was frustrating. Well, just as he finished and just as we were ready to start again, we got this huge thunderstorm in Nashville, Tennessee, where I live. I mean, the sky got dark, which, by the way, changed the lighting on the video because I have these big windows where the light streams in. And so we compensated for that. But then the thunder started and I was able to work it into the videos and make it a little bit humorous. But I mean, it's one of those times when you just shake your head and you go, oh, my gosh, this is crazy. I couldn't come up with this list of problems and execute on this if I tried. It just all happened, I suppose, to test my character and make me a better person. But it was frustrating at the time. The second thing that happened last week that was also frustrating is that the head of the marketing company that we had hired to help with the pre-order campaign for my company decided to resign. So we had been waiting on him for days to supply us with a marketing piece that we thought was going to come any day. And we kept bugging him and it didn't come and it didn't come and it didn't come. And then finally we got it and it was nothing like what we expected. I mean, frankly, we were a little surprised. It was a different deliverable than what we had asked for and what we expected to get. So one of my colleagues gently pushed back and said, gosh, this isn't quite what we were looking for, and made some suggestions to him. Well, he got a little, I don't know if it was spooked or if he got angry with us or whatever, but he resigned and he really left us high and dry. And that was just another blow. Another thing that made last week really a week that I would not want to repeat anytime soon. Well, I caught myself in the midst of that a few times asking myself the question, what's wrong with me? And I don't even think it was even a conscious question. It just bubbled up from my subconscious. It's a good example of a bad question. And I don't know if this ever happens to you, but it frequently happens to me where I'm in the middle of something where bad things are happening and I get this array of bad questions that don't serve me well. And I've learned to challenge those questions and I'm going to talk about those in a moment, but they just happen naturally. Now, let me give you another example. A few weeks ago, I sat down with an old friend to catch up, and he lost his job about 9 months ago in another recession-induced layoff. It was actually the second time he'd been laid off, and he'd been unable to find another job. He'd had plenty of interviews. I mean, he had had a whole string of interviews. He just didn't have any offers. And he said to me, what's wrong with me? Why won't somebody offer me a job? And he was obviously very discouraged. I mean, I would be discouraged too. And I empathized with him and I understood to some extent what he was going through. But it reminded me again that the questions we ask ourselves are powerful tools. They can ignite hope and lead to new insights. They can also destroy hope and keep us stuck in bad assumptions. The key is to be intentional and to employ the questions that serve your purpose and choose our questions well. And that's what I want to cover in this episode. When something bad happens, you could ask this. You could say, why does this always happen to me? Or you might ask, what did I do to deserve this? Or you might ask, what's wrong with me? But as soon as we ask these questions, our brains go to work. They serve up the answers. It's almost automatic, like a machine. And the answers have a way of reinforcing the assumptions behind the questions. So we got to be very careful with them. For example, if you ask the question, what's wrong with me? Like my friend who couldn't find a job, you're assuming that there is something wrong with you. And your mind immediately begins to propose possible answers. Maybe the reason he wasn't getting any job offers was because he was too old. Or maybe because he was too young. Or maybe he was too inexperienced, or Maybe he was overqualified. Maybe it was he was too passive or even too assertive. You know, you get the idea. Whatever the question is, our mind can come up with a lot of reasons for why something is true. The answers, again, reinforce the assumptions and provide, and this is really the rub, an excuse for why you're not getting the results you want. They're not empowering questions. They keep casting you in the role of being a victim. But what if you ask a different kind of question altogether? For example, my friend could have asked, what could I do to make my interviews more memorable? Now, that's a creative question. That's a empowering question. What could I do to make my interviews more memorable? Or he could have asked, what are the two or three attributes that make me the best possible candidate for the job? That's the kind of question that gets you to focus on your assets rather than your liabilities. Or he could have asked, how can I follow up in a way that makes it easier for the prospective employer to say yes? Now, this is where he could have gotten really creative. You know, maybe he could give the employer a trial period, or he could go to work as a volunteer for a few weeks. I mean, there's any number of things. Those are just a couple that come to my mind. The point is, if you ask the right question, you'll get creative in proposing different solutions. He could have asked, and this is an important question, how could my apparent liabilities really be an asset in this situation? These are all constructive questions. They empower and create new possibilities. They lead to action, and they'll produce the right kind of results, the kind of results that you and I are seeking. This last question, how could my apparent liabilities really be an asset in this situation, is particularly interesting. How could your apparent liabilities really be an asset in the situation you're in? For example, if you think you're too old, that could, in fact, be a tremendous asset. One of the things I've realized in recent days is how much age is just something mental. It's just a perception. I mean, certainly you have your chronological age, but you've got your psychological age as well. I was talking to a few people at church this morning, and I said, okay, let's just imagine you got conked in the head, got amnesia, couldn't look in a mirror, and somebody said, hey, let's try to figure out who you are. Let's start by asking, how old are you? Well, if you didn't know how old you were and you didn't have the opportunity to look in a mirror to make a guess, how old do you feel? What's your psychological age? I can tell you how old I feel. I feel like I'm 35. I feel great, but it's largely a state of mind. So again, if you think you're too old, that could in fact be a tremendous asset. You've probably made a lot of mistakes like I have, and you've probably learned from them. And as a result, you've got better judgment, and that can be an asset to a prospective employer or a prospective client. If you think you don't have enough experience, that also can be a great asset. So it works in just the opposite way. Sometimes I talk to young people who say, well, I don't have enough experience. You know, I'm just too young. Well, you know what? Here's the asset in that. You're not locked into the same assumptions as more experienced candidates. The other day, I was talking to a 21-year-old guy that was one of the top insurance producers in his agency at 21, because he wasn't letting his age get in the way. He was thinking outside of the box. If you're young, if you lack experience, it's easier for you to think outside of the box and approach problems with a fresh perspective. I don't care what your liability is. If you ask the right question, you can turn it into an asset, which leads me to my premise for this episode. You can change your outcome by asking better, more empowering questions. And what I'd like to share with you in this episode is 5 strategies for doing just that. So the first strategy: become conscious of the questions you're asking yourself. Now, this is easier to say than to do, because there's a continual dialogue that's going inside of our minds between our ears, right? There's this narrator that insists on commenting on everything that happens in our lives. It's the person, that person or that voice who interprets what happens. Because in every situation, all of us, there's what happens. There's our experience of it, but then there's the meaning that we assign to it. And that's where we get into dangerous territory, because we often reason logically to the wrong conclusion. And a lot of that happens when we ask ourselves the wrong question. So the first strategy is just to become more conscious of the questions that we're asking ourselves. Then number 2, evaluate the question you're asking yourself. Is it a good question? Now, here's how you can tell the difference. A bad question makes you the victim. A bad question takes away your control. A bad question leaves you stuck in the land of impossibility. But a good question, contrary to that, puts you in control. It unsticks you. It gives you freedom and puts you into the land of possibility, where anything can happen, where your mind is free to roam and you're free to create and imagine new solutions or come up with different solutions to your problems. So that's the nature of a good question. So the third strategy, choose the better question. In other words, be intentional. Realize that your humanity, your freedom, is in your ability to choose your response in any situation. A tremendous book that I would commend to you or recommend to you if you haven't read it is Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning. Viktor Frankl was a psychiatrist. He was also a prisoner in a Nazi concentration camp. And he was in unbelievable circumstances where he didn't have control of anything. His captors controlled every aspect of his being. But he came to this blinding insight, this amazing insight, when he realized that they could not control his response to them. That was the secret to human freedom. You can't control what happens to you, but you can control how you respond to what happens to you. And you can also control what questions you ask. So choose the better question. Be intentional about it. Fourth strategy, write down the answers that your brain serves up. So if you ask yourself, for example, the question that I encouraged my friend to answer, who was in a situation where he'd had a lot of interviews but no offers, how could he make, what are two or three things he could do to make those interviews more memorable so he would get an offer? Well, write down all the possibilities. Don't lose them, because that's some of the most creative think time you'll ever experience. And I encouraged him, just write down the answers as you ask yourself these questions. Fifth strategy, act on these insights. Let me tell you, it's not enough to change your thinking. It's critically important. It's foundational. Nothing much happens until you do that. But in itself, just thinking a different thought, answering a different question, doesn't necessarily lead to a different outcome. You've got to take action on what you come up with. You've got to act on the insight. So those five strategies. Let me just summarize it. This whole process goes back to a premise I've written and spoken about many times before. If you want to change the results you're getting, you've got to change your thinking. That's the place where change begins to happen. Everything starts there. Let me ask you this question. What would asking different questions make possible for you? How could this alter your circumstances? How could this change your situation? Well, to comment on this episode, you can go to my blog at michaelhyatt.com, scroll down past the show notes, and there's a comment area where you can leave a comment, you can interact with other listeners, and I can tell you, it's a rich place to learn and a place where I continually learn from my listeners. So I hope you'll do that. Let's go now to some listener questions. John wrote in and he asked, Michael, I'm having a hard time identifying the questions I'm asking myself. How can I get better at this? Well, I want to tell you, learning to become aware of those questions and to ask yourself better questions is like any other skill you try to develop. Like a little confession here, I don't touch type. I'm basically a three-finger hunt and peck typer. And the reason was that when I took typing class in the ninth grade, I broke my elbow playing football. And so I sat in the typing class for the entire semester with my right arm in a cast, and I couldn't type. The teacher gave me a C. I'm not sure why. I couldn't do anything, but they gave me a C. I guess had pity on me. But I never learned to type the right way. And this has always been something that's nagged at me. And every time I've tried to learn, I've gotten sidetracked and I've just said, look, I type plenty fast with three fingers, so forget it. But I mean, I make my living in large part now as a writer. So I thought, if I could learn this, this would be awesome. So I got this little program and started working on it incrementally. And I'm still in the midst of that. I mean, I'm just a few days into it, but I'm bound and determined this time that I'm going to learn to type. But it feels very awkward. It feels very forced. It feels like I've got to be deliberate with every keystroke, because I'm retraining my nervous system so that when my brain gives the signal to type a certain key, I have to use a different finger. It's very awkward. Well, learning to dissect your thinking and to ask better questions is a lot like this at the front end. It just feels difficult. It feels unnatural. It feels like too much work. But if you'll do this, you'll get more facility with it, particularly if you ask a mentor to help you. This is one of the secrets that I've learned. I've had a couple of great mentors who have always been in a position of asking me the better question and helping me get inside my own thinking and challenging the questions that my brain wants to automatically serve up. Another way to do this is to enlist an accountability partner. So, John, I would encourage you to do that. If you can't find a mentor, and I know sometimes they're hard to find, if you can't afford to hire a coach, then at the very least, get an accountability partner, someone that's committed to asking you better questions and helping you catch yourself when you're asking the wrong question and shift your thinking. Mary wrote in and said, "I'm miserable in my job. Unfortunately, it is affecting my life outside of work. I feel that I'm slipping further and further into depression. What can I do to turn my situation around?" Well, Mary, first of all, I'm very sorry for the situation you find yourself in. And unfortunately, I know a lot of people that are in jobs that they don't really enjoy, but they're doing it to make a living and they're just trying to, you know, get through and hopefully get to a better job. But it can affect the rest of your life. And I think that one of the things that all of us have to learn, and I'm still learning this, but you can't always control everything in your environment. I mean, I don't care if you have what you think is your dream job, that too can turn into a nightmare. There can be demands that you didn't anticipate to that job. And it can also be very, very difficult. But here's the thing, the good news, I guess, is that you can control yourself. You can certainly control your thinking. And it really comes down to your emotions. I've learned this through the years that our emotions really do drive everything. How we feel about something is everything, because that's why somebody like Dr. Frankl, for example, could be in a Nazi concentration camp and find freedom and even a certain kind of joy. I'm not trying to minimize the suffering that he went through, but a certain joy in the fact that he had control of his own emotions. He could feel that despite the fact that his circumstances were miserable, that he was hungry and cold and had to work and do forced labor. He could still find a certain amount of joy in the midst of that. And one of the things I learned from Tony Robbins years ago was this triad where he talks about three components that will shift your emotional state instantly. And I've employed these through the years, and they really do work. And the first component is your physiology. I know it sounds simple, but this is the fastest way to make a shift in your emotional state is to shift your physiology. Stand up. Sit up straight. I mean, there's a physiology to being depressed. You know, when your shoulders are kind of slumped over and your breathing gets shallow. You know, you can make yourself feel depressed if you just get yourself into that depressed physiology. But conversely, you can get yourself into a better state if you change your physiology. You know, put your shoulders up. Breathe deeply. Smile. Even smiling releases endorphins that can affect how you feel. So your physiology is the first component. Second component is your language. Watch your mouth. The way that you express what you're experiencing gives definition to it. For example, I wake up in the morning and I say, I've got to go to work, you know, or, oh man, I've got to go to work. You know, that's kind of the language of duty. You know, I'm consigned to this fate that I've got to go to this job that I don't like. I've got to go to work. Conversely, I could say just a little shift in one word. I could say, I get to go to work today. I mean, think about it. I know all these people that are unemployed. You do too. Unemployment is still a problem in our country. But guess what? You have a job, I hope, and you get to go to work. But just that shift in your language can shift your emotional state about how you think about it. Third component in shifting your emotional state is your mental focus. So physiology, language, mental focus. What are you focusing on right now? You can focus on the glass half empty, or you can focus on it half full. And that's the beauty of asking the right question, is it can begin to focus your thoughts on the things that are important, the positive things that will lead to a positive emotional state. Eric wrote in and he asked, "I often witness my friends asking themselves the wrong question. How can I point this out diplomatically in a way that's helpful without making them feel defensive?" Boy, I have found myself there so many times where my friend is asking this disempowering question, and you can just see the spiral begin as they spin out of control and move deeper into discouragement. I would say the first thing you've got to do is listen empathetically. Now, I'm not naturally gifted at this. This is something I've had to learn through the years, and I think God knew I needed to learn this, so he gave me five daughters. And I've spent a lot of my adult life listening to them talk about their issues and their problems. And it's been good for me, and I hope it's been good for them. But I realized that I didn't have any voice into their situation. They wouldn't take me seriously. They wouldn't listen to what I had to say until I demonstrated first that I was willing to listen to what they had to say. Then I would say, also tell them you understand. Express that. I mean, yes, listen, but then express it. Like I said to my friend who couldn't get a job offer, even though he had all these interviews, I said, man, that has got to be frustrating. And of course, he said, yeah, it really is. And so, you know, that created this kind of rapport where he understood that I was getting his situation and how dire it was. But that gave me the opportunity to speak into a situation, and then I could begin to ask a better question. And so after I communicated empathy and after I expressed that I understood his situation, then I could say, well, gee, I wonder if there's two or three things that you could do to make those interviews more memorable to the prospective employer so that they in turn turn around and make you a job offer. And at first he kind of just, you know, poo-pooed that. He wasn't really open to it. He was still kind of stuck in the world of impossibility. And I don't think, frankly, wanted a solution to the problem, or at least at the surface he didn't. And so then I would ask another question and another question and just gently begin to shift his thinking and bring him by the hand to the land of possibility where he could be creative and see what was possible and what he could do to affect the outcome. Teresa wrote in and she asked, in a nutshell, what separates a good question from a bad one? Well, that's the crux of this whole topic, the importance of asking the right question. And again, as I said earlier, a bad question makes you the victim. It leaves you with no control. It leaves you stuck in the land of impossibility. Conversely, a good question puts you in control. It opens up possibility, giving you the freedom to create and to decide on a better outcome. And just asking that question, if you'll just make that subtle shift in your thinking to ask better questions, you're going to find that your brain is automatically going to be serving up better answers that lead to more constructive conclusions. Well, that's it for this episode of This Is Your Life. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you have, please subscribe to it at michaelhyatt.com/This Is Your Life, all one word. That way you won't miss a single episode. You can also find more resources on my blog at michaelhyatt.com, including detailed show notes to some of the resources I've mentioned here. And if you want to catch one of my live presentations, check out my speaking page at michaelhyatt.com/speaking. I've mentioned a couple of my speaking engagements in the announcements at the beginning of the show, but there are many more. I'm usually speaking several times a month, and you can find a complete list on my speaking page. But until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count. This is your life. Are you who you want to be? This is your life. Are you who you want to be?